pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
A new hour has dawned here in Big D as day three of Media Days quieting down. And Alyssa Lang joining us. And I'm so excited about this because I have no idea. Last couple of interviews, I've been like getting a lot of heat for being off message.
For who?
I feel like, people in your ear.
Yeah, that makes sense. Producers.
But I don't. I love this part of it where you get personalities on and I'm not going to like pepper you with, the standard fare.
Everything we've been talking about all day.
People want to know like what's going on with Alyssa Lang, and apparently a lot has, because I joked with you yesterday, the day before, that, I've seen you everywhere.
It's been
lately.
A summer.
Tell
it's
us about your summer.
You know, before we get into that, it's funny because you were bringing the show back, and we've been showing all these great outside shots of Dallas and how beautiful. I don't think I've been outside. But once since we got here on Sunday. I've been outside of this hotel one time.
A young friend here who just graduated college, and we were looking for some place to talk earlier. And we went outside, and we immediately came right back in.
It's so hot.
You do not want to be outside in Dallas.
Yeah, until I'm on the sidelines in Tuscaloosa or in Austin this year, I'm going to reserve all my sweating for that. But no, it's been a great summer. I've gotten a bunch of new opportunities within the company, which is cool. Got to be on the sidelines for the Women's College World Series and see our now current members, at the time future members, Texas and Oklahoma, on their way to a championship series. And then Oklahoma, of course, ending up winning their fourth straight softball national championship. And then got to do some Sports Center, which was really cool. I will say Linda Cohn is one of those examples of heroes that you 100% want to meet. I mean, you talk about a veteran professional ESPN goat, and I didn't know, this new girl coming in, is she going to be cool with me? She was so nice, Paul.
So that was
I was out in LA. She was amazing. She was helpful. She was humble. She was just so kind. So it's been awesome.
I was on with her once, and she had just gotten some award, and I just thought you have to, and she was like, oh, that's so nice, Paul. I'm going, I mean, it was like she was like genuinely appreciative that somebody would make notation. And you also were at the other end of the country. I mean, you're making some noise.
You know, in non-work related news, we also went on a little family beach trip to Ocean City, New Jersey. I've never been to the beach north of North Carolina.
Right.
And I will say, I don't think I'm going to go again north of North Carolina. I think I'm sticking to southern beaches.
Now, is this more on the Atlantic City side like Philly? I mean, I know that route up.
In that area, and it was the first time I'd been to Atlantic City as well. I think it's a little bit north of Ocean City.
Okay.
But, Paul, it's a beautiful area. It's a dry island, so I didn't know that until I got there.
You don't have to oversell me. I've been to Atlantic City.
The concept of beach tags was very new to me. Yeah. I didn't know you had to literally wear a pin saying that you were allowed to be on the beach. Like, I've never been to a beach in the South that has you do that. So a lot of weird experiences.
I was on, I was up east the other day on a beach, and I mean, this is not a beach.
It's just different. Like, as a Southern girl and as Southern, I'm used to the beautiful beaches of North, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Obviously, along the Gulf, there's some wonderful beaches as well. I didn't even put together that there were beaches in New Jersey. And that makes me sound really dumb. I fully understand that, but I just considered going.
The beach I was at was in Rhode Island, and it wasn't a beach.
I've heard those are nice.
Well, everything about it's nice except the actual beach.
Okay, sure. So I'll avoid Rhode Island, too.
The views are spectacular.
What is your Cape Cod? That's on my list.
Yeah, where I was like 30 miles from Nantucket.
When I sat down, you were like, we have to get this show back on the rails. And we've not. Do you want me to ask you questions? I said that to you. I said, does anyone ever ask Paul Feinbaum questions and how your day is going? How are you?
Well, I mean, one of the highlights of my day was talking to you in the other room. It was really a fun conversation.
We had a really deep conversation. Yeah. What's been your best interview here so far? Like, media member, coach?
I think it sounds so predictable, but I love the Saban interview yesterday because it wasn't like, okay, coach, who you like?
Right.
I mean, I don't have a lot of expertise, but I've spent a lot of time talking to usually fired coaches.
Right.
Not
right.
Retired goats. And I've learned where to go or not to go. And when we started talking about his process and things, his preparation, I mean, I was like, this cannot end.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way listening to Sark talk about, he was talking about Pete Carroll and Coach Saban as his mentors, especially Pete Carroll, who gave him the job at Southern Cal. And I mean, those are the kind of conversations I really like.
That's one of the best parts about this week, I think, because once you get into the nitty gritty of the season with a current coach, former, like sometimes we're so time constrained or you're in and out of a place on the weekend, it's hard to have those more deep conversations. Yeah. And I will say, when Coach Saban was at Alabama, the few Bama games that mm-hmm. I got to do on the sure. SEC Network, I just loved our Friday meetings with him because I would always learn so much. Yeah. Today was my first show with him on the desk, and I can see his notes and all of his preparation.
Oh,
every time he opens his mouth, you learn something. But I will say, Paul, at one point, like, you know, I'm like a little nervous sitting next. At least I am. You know, I'm not Paul Feinbaum. I haven't been around for a while, so I was a little bit nervous being next to Coach Saban. At one point, he said, can you give me a piece of paper or something? I just handed him all the paper that I had, and he goes, do you not need some of this? I said, actually, I do need that rundown.
I'm actually doing my first back. Show with him tonight. There's a show on at whatever time it's on.
Yeah.
And that makes me uncomfortable because, I mean, we showed a clip of it earlier. I mean, I'm on earlier literally screaming at Mad Dog Russo about a subject that neither one of us knew anything about. And then I'm going to be sitting up here next to Coach Saban, and I'm going to be like, well, I think Alabama is going to be deficient. Like, this guy's looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Well, he picked Georgia and Texas for the SEC championship, right?
And I think he made a mistake.
Oh.
Yeah, he needs to get some orientation into how not to tick off the people who are paying his salary
at
Alabama.
What if this is like a reverse rat poison situation?
Could be, but
what if this is like him, you know how he always sent messages through the media?
Yeah.
Maybe that, because he also said something about the secondary. Got some questions about the Alabama side. Maybe that's
could
his
be,
way of letting him know in Tuscaloosa, like, you better step it up. Maybe it's reverse psychology.
See, I think he felt obligated to ESPN to give real takes, but I'm particularly curious because he is going to get the reaction. I mean, he's insulated now because you've seen there's like a group of people that follow him, and
he's got a detail.
It's not quite, he doesn't have the motorcycle police like he used to.
He needs it though, because like you walk through Radio Row, you get stopped, right? Like there's a lot of interviews, you want to talk to everyone. Could you imagine if he just took a stroll up Radio Row right now?
Yeah, let's say I'll get up here during break. I'll walk out to get something in Radio Row. I'll have four people say, hey, you got about 10 or 15 minutes for a podcast? And I'm like, it's humbling because they have no earthly idea what you're doing.
Yeah. it's never enough time to talk to everybody that you want to talk to. But certainly when you're Coach Saban at your very first media days as a media member, I can't imagine the list of people who want to talk. So I feel really lucky that we get to spend hours on the desk talking to him. I really look forward, though, to you calling him out on his SEC championship take tonight. I will be watching.
Probably.
So do you think Georgia, Bama, Texas, Bama? What would your?
Oh no, I went with the same two. I'm also not being paid a half a million or $1 million a year by Alabama. I mean, if I was, and by the way, I am available. I will pick Alabama. But I know how
throw the number out there again.
So yeah.
1-888 Paul, what
just,
is it?
Just got an offer right now from Alabama.
Right. Paul is exiting the set, stage right.
So what's left for you this summer? There's not much time left, but I feel like there's you hosting Kimmel or Good Morning
actually,
America
tomorrow.
Or what?
No, I'll host anything they ask me to. I think I'm heading up to Bristol again next week for some Little League World Series action.
Okay.
So I'm excited about that. We'll have our college football seminar here in a few weeks as we get ready for that. And I'm going to squeeze one more vacation in.
Really?
We're going to Hawaii.
Oh, very excited.
We have a friend who lives out there. He is in the military, and he has been stationed out there for the last couple of years. He's actually getting reassigned, coming back to SEC country, going to Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not only going to visit him because we love him, but also using our free room in Hawaii one more time while we can.
Well, I want to say this in conclusion. I'll be somewhere maybe in a couple of weeks when you're back. I hope you'll come back to the show because the Feinbaum callers just fell for you last year.
I love
them. I mean, they fell hard.
Honestly, that's one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had, because I was really nervous to host this show for the first time. Really nervous. I thought they weren't going to call. I thought they were going to see that it was me and go, no way we're calling They showed up for me and still tweet at me. And I feel like part of the family, and I love it.
It was awkward coming back because nobody wanted to see me.
That's not true.
They were like, oh, Alyssa. I mean, I do have, mild experience with bizarre callers, but I was worried for your safety because there were several who were, oh man, she's so great. I mean, they were like,
well, the last time I was here, or the last time I did fill in for you, we had some explosive calls, which then you had to deal with the shrapnel on Monday. And I was worried that maybe that pushed me over the edge, that I wouldn't get invited back.
No,
so hopefully
you are number,
you let me know,
you are
I'll be
number
here.
One. The only problem is that now that you're, hanging out with Linda Cohn and SportsCenter, we're struggling to be able to afford you anymore.
I wish that were the case. Well, that's why I said to you yesterday, you're going to be my agent. You're going to be my agent moving forward.
It could be. I don't know who your current agents are, but I feel like I could give them a run.
Just to, like you just threw it out to Alabama, like open for business. Yeah, let's go.
I will not charge for the first contract.
Wow, I was going to give you 15%.
That sounds familiar.
We just wasted a good 15 minutes of the show.
When are we coming back on the air, guys? Anytime soon.
Alyssa. Oh, we're not in break?
You will see Alyssa Lang on this show soon because they don't want me anymore. They want you.
That is not true.
Thanks
great
so
to be
much.
With you, Paul.
What a great time. We're back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Why do we love SEC football? Because no matter the venue or the rivalry, it's the ultimate hang. Fans of every flavor, good-natured trash talk with a side of andouille. Yes! But according to Johnsonville and the Harris poll, 71% of Americans hang out less than they used to. Why? Could it be that rivalries off the field are tearing us apart? Is it crazy to think a sausage-fueled tailgate party could unite us all? Can't hurt. Keep it juicy out there. Johnsonville, official sausage of the SEC.
Hey, fans! Welcome back to Fansville's Cheers and Tears. Oh. Okay, so like everybody deals with losing, right? To a rival on a last-second field goal. Whatever, it's fine. I'm totally fine. But I cope with losing with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper. Those 23 flavors are like so delicious. They totally wash away the pain of your college football team taking a big fat L. College football, it's a pepper thing.
We are back here in Dallas. I got a few ways into the city as Mike Griffith joins us here at the set. Mike, we haven't had that much of an opportunity to talk about the Dogs, but they are certainly everyone's pick, and you've been pretty much embedded with everything they've been doing all year. Just give us your top tier view.
Well, I mean, it starts with Carson Beck, obviously. I mean, this is an NFL quarterback that's going to be playing in the collegiate ranks thanks to the NFL. And, you look at Carson Beck, I like to say, here's a guy that can solve Rubik's Cube in under a minute and read a defense in 10 seconds. He's got a pretty good assortment of receivers, but I really think the key is going to be the running game. They got a 240-pound running back that you probably haven't heard of, Rod Robinson. He's going to move the pile. And Trevor Etienne, look for him to be the newcomer of the year, an X factor that can get the edge, go between the tackles, and catch the ball downfield. So it all sounds good. It's year two with Mike Bobo working with Carson Beck. And if you want to know what type of expectations year two brings with a coordinator and a quarterback working together, Stetson Bennett, Todd Monken went 15-0 just a couple of years ago in year two. So I think a big jump for the offense. And as Kirby said this spring, time to let the cat go play.
A year ago, there were people being rather snarky about Mike Bobo. Do you feel like he put an end to all that?
Yeah, a lot of people they're still talking about that. Right. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, what do you want? I mean, he coached the winningest quarterback. Hey, listen, I could go down the resume, but they did a great job last year. They were 13-1 in his first year as the coordinator, calling plays with a first-year starting quarterback that had 3 years of rust. I think most importantly, when you look at coordinators, I think the relationship with the head coach is really important. And what type of trust do they have? I mean, Kirby, let's face it. I mean, he's known as a defensive guru, doesn't want his offense to beat themselves. But I think think because he goes back so far with Bobo, he used to be called the Three Amigos. Ray Goff was telling me him and Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart used to call these guys, or no, excuse me, the Three Musketeers. These guys were big buddies, and there's a lot of trust between these guys, and I think that trust enables Bobo to operate somewhat independently of Kirby and with a lot more trust and with a lot more freedom. And when you've got a guy like Carson Beck that could be starting in the NFL, I think this Georgia offense could be dynamic and certainly complex.
Talking to Mike Griffith here, people talk, that's all we talk about in the offseason is the schedule. But when you examine Georgia's schedule, we're not looking at it under conventional terms like this past season.
Sure.
What do you see?
Well, I mean, I see a challenger out of the gate with Clemson. I mean, I don't think that's going to be an easy game. I think Dabo Swinney is a really good coach. And last time these teams played, it was a touchdown game. But, you know, go right down the line, you can't overlook Kentucky. You're getting them early in the season when maybe the Wildcats are still fresh. I don't think they have championship depth, but you catch them early with Brock Vandegrift, a guy that could have easily been the Georgia starter. He's a talented guy, a great leader. Jamon Dumas Johnson, just a couple years ago, he was at the heart of a championship defense at Georgia. Now he faces his old teammates. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Kalen DeBoer opens the SEC season against Georgia in Tuscaloosa. So you don't really get out of September without a lot of challenges. I don't think you can look too far ahead.
Talking to Mike Griffith, let's get beyond Georgia.
Yeah.
You make the rounds here. You pick up all kinds of stuff that we often don't get to regurgitate. What's hot in this building right now?
I mean, look, it's I got to state the, I mean, Texas. I mean, it's been Texas since we arrived. It's been Texas all summer. Steve Sarkisian, slick. Wow. Right? I think he's the football version of Calipari. I mean, this guy's cool. I mean, nothing sticks to this guy. You look at his resume and where he's been. I mean, he's coached under Pete Carroll. He's been a head coach, coached under Saban. He knows the ins and outs, and I think he's very confident. And why wouldn't he be? You know, he's gone up against Kirby Smart before as a play caller. Lit him up, right? I mean, Steve Sarkisian offenses, they're the deal. I mean, he was in Tuscaloosa last year. What was somebody saying? Nick Saban. Oh, Nick Saban, he picked Texas and Georgia. Well, why wouldn't he? Texas kicked his But in Tuscaloosa, he better pick Texas to finish ahead of Alabama. He couldn't beat him at home, nonetheless.
Here we go again. Saban's gone for, I mean, he's already retired. We're still, there goes Mike Griffin. Who let the dogs out?
I mean, we can't pretend it didn't happen. Alabama was an embarrassment in Tuscaloosa last year against Texas. What can you say about it? I mean, Jalen Mills, they didn't know what plays to call for the guy. Oh, one of the best coaching jobs ever. We just don't know how to use him until halfway through the year. I mean, give me a break, Paul. I mean, let's be honest. Nick Saban is a Hall of Fame coach. He will never be equaled. But to say that last year was one of his best years is laughable when you look at some of the other seasons
say that. I was just trying to understand why you were Nick Saban.
Well, because he's such a great coach, it puts into perspective what Steve Sarkisian's done at Texas because they went, wasn't that the first non-conference game the Tide lost at home since like 2007 or something?
You act like I cover Alabama. I don't know.
Well, a lot of people that watch the show might suggest otherwise. But how could you not? I mean, look, we're talking about a 7-time national championship coach. How can we not be sitting here talking about Nick Saban when Nick Saban's not sitting here talking about Nick Saban? Because that's another thing that this week has been all about. And I love it. I love everyone paying, you know, tribute to Nick Saban and all the great things he's done when I still think he's going to come back and coach again before it's all said
and
done.
I knew we'd get to this point. I've been like waiting for the fireworks to go off. So let's go back to what you said months ago here.
Yeah, months ago.
And for those who were not paying attention, elaborate.
Well, I just don't think a guy like Nick Saban is just ready for the quiet life. Look at how engaged he is.
The quiet life. He's like done more interviews here today than Kalen DeBoer.
As well he should. But look at all the wisdom that this guy has. I mean, you listen to Nick Saban. You want to vote president for him. Can he run? Is there another ticket we can have for Nick Saban?
Now that's the best idea I've heard you come up with.
I'm not kidding. I mean, Nick Saban is a problem solver. Nick Saban is a football genius.
So let's go obfuscate and get to what you said a minute. When and where do you think he is going to come back and coach?
When that we're somewhere that will pay him enough money that can guarantee him he can get the best players, which is what Steve Spurrier told us when we asked about how long will Saban coach. He said until he doesn't get the best players anymore. Well, you bring him back into a scenario where he can compete for players on a level playing field.
There will be good jobs opening every year that can easily afford Nick Saban, and I say that because nobody's going to have a hard time going to the president of whatever university and say, listen, I can get Nick Saban. Just go get him.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow. He's going to be fantastic. We're all going to enjoy seeing Nick Saban on television, whether it's the SEC Network or
Game. But get to my question. I mean, you are really stuck on this Nick Saban is going to coach again. And I don't know anyone else who is on that track.
Well, I don't know. Well, tell me why he wouldn't. When you look at the talent and the experience and the championships, do you really think Nick Saban can just sit on the sideline? I mean, right now he's relevant because there's no games going on. But about halfway through the year, he's going to figure out the praise passed him by and the actions on the field. And I just don't think a competitor like Nick Saban, who still has it in him. I mean, you look at the guy. I mean, he's a fountain of youth. He's got the energy. He's got the knowledge. He's got the wisdom. You just give him the program. I'm not going to go 100
student,
in.
You're a student of history.
If I could hire a coach and Nick Saban is out there, I'm going to offer him whatever I can. Yeah, if I'm North Carolina and I got bank, I'm going to throw the bank at him.
Yeah, but Mike, be realistic.
Mike Brown.
Be realistic. There are not many. I mean, you really think if North Carolina made a change and Bubba Cunningham called Jimmy Sexton that Nick Saban would think about going to Chapel Hill for 2 seconds?
I'm probably a bad example, but give me a program.
I mean, a good program.
Ohio State loses again, right? And they say, you know what? What do we got to do? This Ryan Day guy, we got all this talent. We can't win the games we're supposed to win. Hey, here's an idea for you. Hire Nick Saban. You give Nick Saban Ohio State's roster, they probably win three championships
that's a good
in a row. I mean, really.
But I think it as good of an idea as it may or may not be, I just can't wrap my arms around it. And I'm not trying to make too much out of the guy's age because I don't think it really matters.
Well, okay, right now it doesn't. Okay, we're talking about 2024. I listen to Nick Saban. I watch Nick Saban. I say, this guy can still win football games. He won football games last year. I mean, he's one broken Jalen play.
He got beaten by Steve Sarkisian by double quadruple digits.
He got beat by 10 points at home. But by the end of the year, he had Alabama playing like they should have been playing at the start of the year. Okay. And Georgia wasn't there to get in the way. So I really do believe, that...
Okay, you mentioned Ohio State before. I know we got to go here, but this is too interesting. Expand that a little bit, because Ohio State's probably not going to make a change.
I don't know.
How many other programs do you think Nick Saban would consider? Because I don't think he'd consider any, but you do believe this.
I believe the potential is there. Now, you took me here. I just want to point this out. You took me down this road. All I'm saying is there's a lot worse coaches up there. Nick Saban.
You've been down this road. I just.
You brought me back down the road. I don't think he's done, Paul. I'm listening to Saban. I'm listening to the wisdom. I'm listening to the advice. I'm hearing everybody pay tribute. They all want him to be done. They all want to believe that he's done. I'm just telling you, this guy can win more championships as a head coach. So, I just can't believe he's going to be content on the sideline.
We are 3 days into SEC Media Days, and this is now the biggest headline to come out of here, that Mike Griffith, a respected journalist, guy that's covered the league, how long?
Are you betting against Nick Saban? Is that what you're talking about?
Just answer my question.
I don't know, 30 years.
Guy who's covered the league 30 years just said right here that Nick Saban is going to return to coaching. I mean,
at some point.
We need to interrupt the network programming, the rest of the. I mean, this is a big deal that you said that. And believe it.
You're just not popping off. I don't believe the guy's done. Can't believe it.
Okay. We will revisit this. When we come back, we'll talk to somebody who actually has great command of his present. That is a general right there who I cannot wait to talk to the general about his decision to try to help lead the CFP into the new generation. We'll talk to the new head of the CFP right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick an area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. There's nothing more exciting than going yard with the king of sportsbooks, BetMGM. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
855-467-3639. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on market and expire 24 hours from issuance. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
And we are back here in Dallas, of course. So many things are going on, and what a great pleasure to welcome the new head of the CFP, Lieutenant General Richard Clark. Just weeks ago, you officially walked away. It's kind of hard to walk away, but you left the military after a career of an extraordinary service to take over the CFP. That is one of the more unique and unusual changes I've seen, Air Force General to college football.
It was, people have asked me, is this your dream job? And I go, well, no, because I never even dreamt that it was possible. And to be here now, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful to be a part of this and excited about what is coming in college football. And to be a part of that is awesome.
And certainly, You have some experience at college football, obviously, not only participating, but you've been at the academy out in Colorado Springs. But when they came to you, I'm sure an about to be retired general, I know, has multiple opportunities. There are a lot of big corporations who would love nothing more than to get their hands on you. Tell us about the decision.
Yeah, so I got a call from a search firm, and I knew them from another search that I was on. I was on the committee, and they said, hey, CFP is looking for a new executive director. You're the non-traditional candidate. Would you be willing to put your name in the hat? And I did, and I went through the series of interviews, and I got the job, and my wife and I had to make a decision. To me, it was easy. You're right, there's other opportunities in industry and some other things that I could have done, but I really wanted something that every morning I woke up still doing something that I could be passionate about and love, and college football. I played college football. I've been a fan of college football my entire life, and to be able to think about it every day and to help the country move college football to the next level, how do you pass that up?
You're being very generous about your career. You played on an outstanding team. I mean, academy teams have moments of absolute greatness. Throughout history, that's we've celebrated the number one teams at the service academies. But you played on a top 10 team.
We were great. If I do say so myself, my teammates will appreciate that. We were great guys. But no, it was good years. Ken Hatfield was our coach for the first 2 years, Fisher DeBerry.
Sure.
So we had amazing coaches. My teammates are lifelong friends, and it was the experience of a lifetime. And one thing I tell people is if we had the 12-team playoff back then, we'd have been in it.
We would have.
And it would have been a life changer, so what we're doing now is going to change a lot of lives and change the trajectory of a lot of teams and give the country something that they hadn't had before. So I'm excited.
General, I know when you were named many months ago, you have to prepare, but it's not like you had a cush job to walk away from.
Right,
there was a lot going on. How have you indoctrinated yourself into this literally crazy world of college football today?
Yeah, I have to give credit to Bill Hancock.
Sure.
Because I was supposed to start the job in January. There was some holdup on general officer nominations at the time, and my replacement at the Air Force Academy wasn't named.
I'm mildly familiar with that story.
Right. And so the Secretary of the Air Force asked me if I'd stay till June, and Bill was gracious enough to say, I'll stick around until Rich can start the job. And first, I thank him for that, because if he hadn't done that, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But then in the meantime, I was able to attend selection committee meetings. Okay. I was able to attend management committee meetings. I was involved in a lot of the other discussions that Bill was having, and he was just kind enough to really mentor me through that. So really that delay turned into an opportunity for me to understand what I was getting into and get some of the background on some of the decisions that are going
to
happen.
Yeah,
in the next few months.
To get into politics, I vaguely remember reading about a good friend of mine who's now in the U.S. Senate having a role in your extension indirectly.
Yes, sir. In the end, it worked out for me. Yeah. So I'm not going to say anything about that other than I'm glad where I landed. It all worked out well.
Yeah, certainly. Coming from where you come, I mean, it's such a fascinating field. I'm sure they asked you this, but as you were going through the process, certainly no one had credentials like you in terms of, you know, oh my goodness, that is incredible to think about. But what did you share with the committee in terms of your background in the military at the highest level and how you transitioned that to a completely different world in many ways?
Right. Yeah. You know, some of the questions they asked me were things like, so what's your experience with media, the deals and working with that frame of what the CFP is going to be involved in? And honestly, I had nothing there. They asked me, what about game operations? What do you know about game operations? Well, I've been to games, you know, and I've seen them. I've seen the end product. So there were a lot of things, I think, that made me the non-traditional candidate because I wasn't steeped in those areas. But when it came to things like leadership, one of the things I told them was, I've had to lead leaders in my past. You know, I've had other general officers who worked for me that I had to help move them into a direction. And sometimes general officers who I worked for that I had to help make decisions and get them to a point where they could do the things that they needed to do. And I think that's a big part of this job. Working with the commissioners, I mean, they are some of the most brilliant people I've ever known. They certainly know college football and college athletics, and they understand the other surrounding enterprises. And, you know, it's my job to help move us all in the same direction. And I think that is something that I have some experience in. And honestly, every job I've gone into in the military, usually I didn't know that much about it going in, but I had to rely on my team. I had to learn fast and really just dig into it to be able to lead it in the right way.
One thing that's so unique, understanding the military, is the fact that people actually keep secrets. That doesn't really happen in college football very often. So you may have your work cut out for you.
Yeah,
there.
That could be an issue, but we'll work through that as it comes.
As you look ahead, you're coming in at an extraordinary time, General, where we're going to this playoff, which seems like everyone is so excited about. It's in place. So what are some of the first responsibilities, the first things that you are going to have to deal with?
I think my main responsibility really is to help the CFP team to execute an amazing first 12-team playoff. And it's got to be spectacular. We can't muddle into this. The logistics of it, the operations of it, a lot of these words that I've dealt with in the military, we have to make sure that we get those things right, because if it comes and it's not as spectacular as it could be, not a good start. And so that's really first responsibility.
One thing you will find familiar, General, is the bureaucracy. There's plenty of that. But I'm particularly curious because I've had the opportunity to visit with other elite military leaders, and there is a transition, because a lot of us, we don't have what it takes to do what the fine men and women of the armed services do. So we operate on a slightly different clock. Maybe not the commissioners. How do you not so much dial down, but reacclimate, because this is a civilian world that you're dealing with now.
I'll be honest with you, sir. There has not been a dial down in the 5 weeks that I've been here. I've only been in the office 4 days.
Okay.
I hit the road as soon as I got there. We went to Atlanta first, and we were working with the Atlanta site team to get ready for this year's championship game. The next trip, we went to Miami to get ready for next year's championship game. Then I was on a oversight committee with the NCAA. Now media day, so Bill Hancock's pace was fast, and so is this one, but I love it.
I think it's just when the general walks in, people go, I better be on. I don't know what on time is with a general, but it's certainly not the time that you're supposed to be there, is it?
You're supposed to be there 5 minutes early. That's what they teach you. But I, you know, I have also learned that I'm in a different world. Sure. I'm not in the military now. And that is not a bad thing at all.
In a couple of years.
Yeah, but the people that I'm working with, honestly, are so professional and so passionate about what they're doing. And I find no lapse in talent and skill and commitment to the mission and the job. I love what I'm doing. I love the team that I get to work with.
General Clark, thank you. It's a great pleasure to meet
thank
you.
Thank you, sir.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Honor. Honor's mine. Talk. Thank you.
We'll take a short break. We have another hour and change as we continue on day three of SEC Media Days from Dallas.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. Kenny Smith joining us, written a fantastic piece for The Athletic about the transition. That seems to be the theme so far, is Saban to DeBoer. Just give us your impressions.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when somebody like Nick Saban steps away as abruptly as he did, and you bring in somebody that a lot of people in the Southern footprint didn't know their name or who they were, it's obviously going to be pretty jarring. But I've been really surprised by how smoothly this transition has gone, both from a team standpoint, when you think about how few players Alabama lost after spring practice. Obviously, on the recruiting side, they have one of the best recruiting classes in the country. And you really got a chance to see that today when you hear players talk about how smooth the transition has been and how much they respect the way that Kalen DeBoer has come in and added his own imprint on the program, but also kept a lot of the traditions. And that's something that I wanted to do in this story that you're referencing. It's the Alabama fan survey. So I put out a Google form where I just polled the fans about where they see the program going under DeBoer, what their expectations are on the recruiting trail, where they see the team doing in 2024 and beyond. And we got, you know, over 600 responses, so pretty good.
What did you learn from that survey?
Yeah, I think the big question when examining Alabama's season is it possible to recalibrate the expectations after what Nick Saban has built for almost 20 years? And what I found is expectations are still really high in the program. 70% of the fan base expects Alabama to play in the SEC championship game this year.
Really?
70% of the fan base expects for Alabama to at least win one game in the college football playoff this year. A good amount of the fan base expects for the program to still recruit at a top five level nationally, you know, this year and moving forward. So expectations are extremely high. But in that same vein, you know, over 95% are very pleased with the transition. That was the first question in the survey, was from the day he retired to this point, how pleased are you? And overwhelming support for what Kalen DeBoer has done. And
good.
Yeah, I mean, at the time that you saw him get hired, to say 95% of the fan base at least is very pleased, you'd be, you know, pretty surprised by that. So that's just a testament to what DeBoer's done. And obviously what happens on the field is ultimately going to determine where the fan base is at with him. But to this point, it's really, you know, remarkable how he's kind of won over everybody in the state.
Yeah, we'll leave out Saban's transition from Mike Shula to Nick Saban, but I can't recall anything quite like this, the positivity.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think about how other transitions have gone, when you think about like a Steve Spurrier, South Carolina transitioning out, or a Mac Brown at Texas, when somebody of Saban's magnitude leaves the game, and again, as abruptly as it was, for Greg Byrne to quickly identify Kalen DeBoer, bring him into the fold, and the way that he's been able to keep the ship moving pretty smoothly has been you know, really remarkable. So again, we'll see what happens this fall, but you know, Kalen DeBoer has definitely won over a lot of people, you know, in the Alabama footprint, and I thought he had a great day today as well.
Yeah, by the way, I want to get you back soon and flesh this out. We unfortunately went a little bit long with the general, but I'm really intrigued by what your read on the fan base is, because if I could interpret it in the final 20 seconds, it seems like they expect to go to the playoffs, but they are, at least for the moment, patient.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the questions was, what do you expect Alabama's record to be? And the overwhelming majority said about 10-2. So they're expecting
that's
a double-digit
right.
season, but 10-2 will get Alabama into the playoffs.
Exactly.
So they're expecting, you know, Alabama to be in the playoffs perennially, and expecting Kalen DeBoer to win a national championship within his first four seasons, which I feel like is a fair assessment of where he at and where he's at and where the program is at.
Let's come back in a couple of days if you have time. I'd like to really dig into this a little deeper once we get out of this
run. Definitely.
Thank you very much, Kenny.
Yeah,
always good to see you. We'll be right back.